It's such a delight to see you. Did I startle you?
I startled you.
I'm so happy to have with me Chad Summers, good friend and fabulous singer. Thank you for joining me. We didn't communicate about our concert dress tonight. No, I'm kidding. He'll be like this later. Welcome to our season finale. I can't believe we're already at the end, in the beginning of June. And we have a program tonight that I really can't think of another concert that has more sunshine in it. It is such a beautiful, all of the music is so beautiful. You'll notice we have an unusual setup here to start the show. That's because we're beginning with a woodwind serenade, and in this case, the French horns are part of the woodwind serenade, and a bass is also part of the serenade. That is just a little miniature miracle of a piece by a 17-year-old Richard Strauss. Yeah, it creates a perfect little world inside of itself that forecasts what's to come with him, but is already so fully formed. Very beautiful opening to the evening. We'll close with Dvorak's D major symphony number 6, which is full of sunshine and, oh my goodness, just serenity. Beautiful, blissful, exciting music. And in between, Chad and I and the orchestra get to play the second performance ever of these beautiful Becoming a Redwood songs of Lori Lightman. Chad premiered this cycle of songs last year? Up in Sonoma and work directly with Lori Lightman. And Chad, I just wanted to talk with you about that experience. I mean, it's a very unique experience to work directly with a composer on a brand new work. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me out. And I'm so delighted to bring these pieces to Whittemore. So thanks for programming them.
Sure.
In the world of classical singing, we typically sing Mozart, a lot of Mozart, a lot of dead people. So when it comes to new and living work, fluidity is the word that comes to mind. I've somehow made a career out of a lot of new work and new works. So working with a composer is one of my passions. I love doing it. And Lori is such a wonderful person and such a beautiful composer. She's an A-list composer through and through. And then Dana Gioia is California's own poet laureate, who I've been following for years, so I super geeked out when I was asked to do it. Dana Gioia, I get to meet him? And he also was the head of the National Endowment for the Arts of the Obama administration. And he lives up in Santa Rosa. So he and Lori came down and worked with us. I think the biggest surprise to me was Lori was asking me questions. Do you think we should add this diminuendo? I said, no, never diminuendos. Kidding. She was asking my opinion. And that really is the spirit. I think in classical music, we forget how collaborative the artwork is between the composer and the performers. We often think about like music history in the terms of composition history and composers. And that kind of leaves out I don't mind it, but it leaves out the singers and it leaves out that whole interaction of the performance history of the piece. So, you have Mozart, who's writing these pieces specifically for singers as well, the Queen of the Night, Handel all over the place. There were these specific singers everyone was writing for. So this isn't a new thing, but because new works are maybe not so commonly performed, it is a fun thing to get to do.
Yeah, and Lori is like a very normal human. We tend to think of composers, even composers who are living, as like, what is it exactly that you do? That's why she asked you questions. That's why she said, oh, would this be better or that? Or which, what changes do you need? Composers know that they need to work with the people delivering their art. And find those insights. She and I have corresponded during this year, and she's asked me a lot of questions about things she's noticed you know, does this really work and should I make changes? My answer every time has been no, because her intuition as a composer for singers, especially, is really keen. And this poetry, it's hard to talk about, but it reminds me of how music makes me feel as a listener, but uses words to describe it, which is something that's impossible.
Yeah, totally. Working with Dana was a dream come true for me. I'm a huge poet. I read poetry. One of the rare few who do. And you know, he gave me one of his books, which is now like a treasured possession of mine. But you know, when you have someone like people like Lori and Dana, like you're talking about, their intuition is so right on that you know, even though they are asking questions, you rarely have to answer anything or change anything. I do want to say that the piece was originally scored for soprano and piano. And it was actually Norman Gamboa, the conductor of the premiere, asked her, well, what do you think about a tenor singing these songs? And she had never had the idea. So, you know, he sent her my information, and then she rewrote a lot of but she made edits and changes. You've noted the differences between the piano reduction and the orchestral, the orchestration. There are a lot of differences in the song cycle, so it really was like a new piece that she breathed into the meeting. The poetry itself is a mixture of love, jubilation, the heart of grief, the very depths of grief, and learning to come to grips with the human experience, which encompasses all of it. And it really wraps up nicely in the fourth song, that everything comes to like a really nice close, all those themes. So I'm just delighted to be here. Thank you.
Of course. The title of the whole cycle is also the title of the last song, Becoming a Redwood. And even before I read the poetry or heard or seen the score, I was curious about becoming a redwood. This is not a phrase, I don't think we have that actual phrase in the poetry. There's references to redwoods, but really what that is, as you will come to learn, is in this process of living, of incredibly intimate human relationships, of grief, of loss is rather unimaginable, and then somehow realizing that not just all human beings suffer this way, but all life is somehow rooted in all aspects of the human experience, as we feel it, the human experience. There's kind of an imagining of trees and rocks and grass and roots of the grass. And what do they feel? What do those things feel just by being? And hence, you are suddenly becoming a redwood, right? How long have those trees been there? What have they been through? What have they seen? It's just, I don't know, but I get earworms when I'm working on pieces and preparing them for concerts. I get earworms if I'm not. For some reason, the Emperor Concerto was in my head today. It wasn't, but that's okay. The thing about this is my earworm is the poetry, which is such a huge compliment to the composer, because the scoring, I'll say this again later in the concert, but every melody, every rhythm, you can't have melody without rhythm. Rhythm is the first ingredient of music. Nothing happens without rhythm, because melody can't exist without rhythm. The rhythm comes from the flow of the text as you would speak it. Just sitting there, if you were to read it aloud to yourself, you would be in some way referencing the rhythmic structure of each song.
Yeah.
And then she takes that rhythm and makes, I don't know this for sure, but I have to assume that she then constructs the melodic line, the rise and fall, the notes, and that generates what you hear in the orchestra. There's strands of the melody that become counterpoint, and harmony. So it's just, I've rarely had earworms about vocal literature that are in the, where the text is generating my earworm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, Chad, go ahead.
This is something that Dana did at the premiere. Do you mind if I read the poetry of the last song? And I should have been prepared for this, I'm so sorry. Can I borrow some of this program? And I'll be here to read the poetry. Thank you so much. I promise I'll give it back. A recitation. Stand in a field long enough, and the sounds start up again. The crickets, the invisible toad who claims that change is possible. And all of other life too small to name, first one, then another, until innumerable they merge into the single voice of a summer hill. Yes, it's hard to stand still, hour after hour, fixed as a fence post, hearing the steers snort in the dark pasture, smelling the manure, and paralyzed by the mystery of how a stone can bear to be a stone, the pain the grass endures breaking through the earth's crust. Unimaginable, the redwoods on the far hill, rooted for centuries, the living wood grown tall and thickened with 100,000 days of light. The old windmill creaks in perfect time to the wind shaking the miles of pasture grass, and the last farmhouse light goes off. Something moves nearby. Coyotes hunt these hills, a pack of feral dogs. But standing here at night accepts all that. You are your own pale shadow in the quarter moon, moving more slowly than the crippled stars. Part of the moonlight as the moonlight falls, part of the grass that answers the wind, part of the midnight's watchfulness that knows there is no silence but when danger comes.
Yep. Thank you, Rabbi Milner. Let's hear it from Rabbi Milner. Woo! And there are threads and through lines across all the songs about love, about danger, about loss. And when we're not, I mean, none of us, oh, we
that's our timer.
That's our timer. Whether or not, you would have to have studied these songs to really know when those threads are reconnecting. But you experience it anyway, even if intellectually you've never studied the score to know that they're there. Those little earworms return and subconsciously are there in your ear. These are just beautiful songs. It's such a privilege to do them with friends. And such a wonderful, beautiful, open, generous singer. Big-hearted tenor here. Thank you, Chad. Thank you for coming. Let's see what you do.